Welcome to Making Waves, independent voices for peace and justice, your local connection to the world on WSCA LP 106.1 FM, Portsmouth Community Radio. This is Amy Antonucci, and I'm happy to introduce our show to you today, February 4th, 2006. We're also really happy to be here after a few days of the station being off air due to transmitter problems. Here's what we have coming up. For our news segment today, we'll bring you the latest Media Minute segment, followed by coverage from this past Tuesday Portsmouth, New Hampshire protest of Bush during his State of the Union speech. We will then have interviews exploring Bolivia's new government and Iran, the growing crisis, both from Red Eye Cooperative Radio. For People's History, we'll hear from Michael Parenti on the phony war on crime. We'll also have music and announcements, and we'll end with Between the Lines, independent radio out of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Here we go with Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
There are some scary new developments in the ongoing controversy over government information manipulation. A Pentagon document declassified last month, signed by Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, provides additional insight into the military's propaganda efforts. It admits that propaganda intended for international consumption is increasingly leaking back into the United States thanks to the Internet. And the document, called the Information Operations Roadmap, mentions the existence of several websites that have been set up by the U.S. government for propaganda purposes but display no evidence of their origin. It also hints that the Pentagon's campaign to plant stories in Iraqi media runs afoul of U.S. law. More has come to light about the Iraq initiative itself. The $100 million five-year contract between the Pentagon and the Lincoln Group is now publicly available thanks to a Freedom of Information Act request. It's surprisingly vague, allowing government propagandists for hire, quote, maximum flexibility, end quote, to produce and distribute their fake news, up to and including the use of deception as necessary. It also suggests the campaign extends far beyond the bounds of Iraq. Back at home, some startling revelations about the government's plans for the media in the event of a national emergency. In 2002, the White House promulgated executive orders leading to the creation of the Northern Command for National Defense, the first military command exclusively devoted to domestic operations. While the Bush administration drew partly on emergency orders first penned by President Reagan to create this system, it reportedly added some provisions of serious concern. One of them gives the president the authority to use the military to seize control of radio and TV stations. That's an overly drastic option to contemplate, as licensed broadcasters are already obligated to participate in the National Emergency Alert System and are required by law to relay all presidential messages in a time of national crisis.
There's division in the ranks now among telephone companies over the concept of network neutrality. Phone giants, most notably AT&T, Bell South, and Verizon, believe they should get paid not only for providing a connection to the Internet, but also for carrying content across their networks. This would fundamentally change the conditions under which the Internet has flourished and opens up the specter of data discrimination based on an online speaker's ability to pay. Now, it would seem that Verizon is backpedaling on its ambitions to put toll booths on Internet traffic, claiming it would rather work to develop a voluntary framework governing data discrimination instead of asking Congress to endorse or disregard the principle. Documents filed with the FCC explain why Verizon may be concerned about net neutrality. It's reserving more than 80% of the capacity of its new fiber optic network to offer television services, leaving very little overhead for web browsing and email. AT&T, however, has reiterated its commitment to squeeze online content providers for extra cash. And while both companies claim they just want fair compensation for the use of their networks, they're not exactly starved for cash. Last year, AT&T reported a $4.8 billion profit, while Verizon raked in $7.4 billion.
CNN is taking steps to look and sound more like Fox News. The networks hired two right-wing commentators to host new shows. The first is Glenn Beck, who last September disparaged both the victims of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks and those displaced by Hurricane Katrina.
When I see, you know, 9/11 victim family, you know, on television or whatever, I'm just like, oh, shut up. I'm so sick of them because they're always complaining, and we did our best for them. But the second thought that I had when I saw these people and they had to shut down the Astrodome and lock it down, I thought, I didn't think I could hate victims faster than the 9/11 victims.
Beck also coordinated pro-war rallies for America in the run-up to the 2003 invasion of Iraq. The second new face at CNN is William Bennett, a high-stakes gambler who's found fame and fortune writing and talking about morality.
I do know that it's true that if you wanted to reduce crime, if that were your sole purpose, you could abort every black baby in this country and your crime rate would go down. That would be an impossible, ridiculous, and morally reprehensible thing to do, but your crime rate would go down.
William Bennett just ended a stint as a pundit for Fox and replaces columnist Robert Novak, who left CNN for Fox earlier this year. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
Here's E.J. Hat Attacks with Mr. President, a song that he recorded live in his small cabin in the backcountry of Maine using an open microphone, acoustic guitar, and computer.
Hey, Mr. President, take a look at my life. I'm 32, don't know what to do. I want to raise a family, oh, what should I do? Don't want to raise a soldier or two. The color of the day. We in high alert, can we go out and play? I don't want to raise a child like that. Don't want to raise a soldier or two. Little boy, ask why is that? All the flags are flown half-staff. I don't want to raise a child like that. Don't want to raise a soldier or two. Sirens are sounding, get back inside. Head for the shelter, it's time to hide. I don't want to raise a child like that. Don't want to raise a soldier or two. Mommy and Daddy are down on their knees. Their son's been called Uncle Sam's in need. 18 years old, they said no draft, but the little boy's heading overseas. The little boy's heading overseas.
That was E.J. Hat Attacks with Mr. President. And now for coverage of the January 31st, 2006, Bring the Noise, Drown Out Bush's Lies protest that happened during the State of the Union speech in Portsmouth, New Hampshire Market Square this past week. It was sponsored by The World Can't Wait and Seacoast Peace Response and had a turnout of between 150 and 200 people.
Well, thank everybody for coming out tonight. I've heard some people ask, why are you making public noise? It doesn't seem dignified. Well, you know, if you think we want to come out here into the cold, wet streets of Portsmouth just for fun, that is certainly not the case. It's cold out here, it's a little bit icy, and we would prefer not to make noise. But we're not fooling around. America faces a serious threat, and we have to confront that threat. Here's the basis of our action. our American system of government relies on the consent of the governed. And public silence is a statement of consent. And we do not consent to the outrageous anti-American policies of this administration.
No. It would,
they are anti-American. Look, for all of us, it would be a lot easier to just stay home. But tonight, arising from a deep love of our country that we all feel, we feel sadness, we feel anger at what's being done, and we feel a determination to defend America. I grew up in the 50s, and I don't know about everybody else, but I was taught that as a citizen, as a patriotic American, it is our obligation, it is our duty to stand up and protect our nation from attacks, from without and from within. And I'll tell you, the Cheney-Bush administration is doing great harm to our country. We stand here tonight to say loud and clear, we do not consent, we will make public noise. You are harming this country that we love, and we will not be quiet. How long does the list need to be? Starting a war based on lies, government spying on our own citizens, shredding our Constitution, torture as American policy? Who would have ever thought that would happen? Secrecy when our founders demanded open government, assaulting the environment, destroying public education, lack of proper care for servicemen and women, veterans and military retirees, enriching the richest at the expense of the rest of us, increasing the power of the presidency when the founders of this country set up a system of checks and balances to protect us from dictatorship, corruption and unbridled corporate greed, imperial signing statements aimed at undoing laws. Make no mistake about it, tonight the smell of fascism is in the air. And this is not a word to use lightly, but this is fascism that is in the air, and we need to fight back. Their survival. The survival of our democracy is in real jeopardy from this administration. As American citizens, we have an obligation to stand up and say, enough. Tonight, we will not be quiet. We will loudly defend our nation, our rights, our laws, our values, and our traditions. We will not sit quietly by as they tear at our Constitution. And we are saying we still believe in America's potential, and we want our country back. Tonight we join citizens all across America in cities and towns in defense of that vision of our founders. When Bush begins his speech at 9 o'clock, we will make noise because the State of the Union is a state of emergency. And I would suggest, I got an idea, after we're done here, because we'll probably be done when Bush is still speaking, that we make creative use of our car horns. So as we drive home, let our neighbors know that people everywhere stand up for America and will not yield quietly to this outrageous administration, to the lies and deeds of this criminal group. Look, we're not out here for fun. It's cold, it's icy, but the stakes are huge. They couldn't be bigger. Our determination is deep, and we are just beginning. Thank you all for coming out here. We are just beginning. Nice noise. Let's see. There's Tom Jackson here somewhere. Tom.
Good evening, people. Good evening. My name is Tom Jackson. I'm here with Seacoast Peace Response and New Hampshire Peace Action and a whole bunch of other groups that believe in peace. It's great to see you all. Thanks for turning out this evening. This is exactly the kind of action that we need to be taking. The vigils, the marches, all those kinds of things are great things, and we need to keep on doing those. But we need representative actions like this that are nonviolent, but that are showing that not only do we refuse to cooperate with the neoconservative agenda of the Bush administration, but we refuse to even listen to their lies any longer. So something tells me that you people are ready to make some noise tonight, am I right? I, like you, refuse to listen this evening to the ongoing lies of this administration that, as Bert Cohen said, is a criminal administration. Whether it's illegal eavesdropping on the people of this country or invading and occupying a sovereign nation in violation of international law abroad, this is a criminal administration. Do you agree? So this is the kind of thing we need to keep on doing. We need to show that we are not going to cooperate with this administration any longer. So thank you for being here. I want to share just one more thing with you. Before I came over here tonight, I was looking online, and there was an article that said tonight Mr. Bush is going to be saying that America is addicted to oil. All right? Well, it's about time you realize that, for one thing. For another thing, that, of course, in and of itself, is true. When you click the link, it says after that, not just that we're addicted to oil, but that we need to get away from foreign oil. We need to get it through to him. We need to get away from oil, period. We're talking about an administration with over 40 former oil executives in their cabinet. They are not interested in making significant changes. It's up to us. Thanks again for being here. Let's make some noise.
George Bush says he's a man of God. George Bush says he's a man of God. Does a man of God start wars?
No!
Does a man of God funnel all the money to the rich?
No!
Take away services to the poor?
No!
George Bush is no man of God. I hear people saying, God bless America. Well, that's okay. God bless the world.
John Demos? And hello. Thank you for coming this evening. My name is John Demos. I work for a group called American Lands Alliance. And one of the most appalling things about this administration is what they've been doing to the environment since Bush took office in 2001, and I do mean took office in 2001. It's been about the most frustrating 5 years of my life as an environmental activist. While he's been weakening clean air, clean water, forestry legislation, the Endangered Species Act, but he's not through. And a couple of things this year that people have to pay attention to. The Endangered Species Act is in danger of becoming extinct this year. And there's also a bill coming up before Congress this spring that will deal with forest protection and will seriously undermine protection for our national forests and allow them to get in and do more and more logging. And one aspect of this bill is it will allow them to go in using catastrophe as an excuse, which sounds very familiar to what this administration does all the time, and go in and log our forests, use fire as an excuse, and circumvent the Endangered Species Act. What they're going to allow them to do if this bill passes is do the endangered species surveys after they've logged, which is like shoot and ask later, which this administration is very good at. So I just ask you, so your representatives in New Hampshire really need to hear from you on these two things, the Endangered Species Act and it's H.R. 4200, which deals with forestry. And we got to send this guy, the man who would be king, back home as soon as possible. Thank you. We have a few minutes till 9 o'clock. It'll be at 9 o'clock, but there's a lot of us here. It's a great group, so meet your neighbors. Make sure that Seacoast Peace Response has a way to get in touch with you, and we can build on this, because this has to be just the beginning here. Bush, he may not resign. Even though we're demanding that he step down, he may actually not step down. So, I know, hard to believe. This, our work is just beginning here. We have to make sure that we are heard. And we're not going away. We're not going to be quiet. We're not going to consent. You know, it's been quite a day in history with the passing of Coretta Scott King. We've got to carry on that tradition. And also be real careful about the ice. We've had two people slip and fall already. This is real icy here. So, when the clock hits 9, you know what to do.
Coming up on 9 o'clock, the crowd and the noise continued to build. Was some noise from the demonstration in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, this past Tuesday during Bush's State of the Union speech. The protest, Bring the Noise and Drown Out Bush's Lies, drew between 150 and 200 people. It was sponsored by the worldcantwait.org and Seacoast Peace Response. Here's Eliza Gilkison with Man of God.
Cowboy came from out of the west with his snakeskin boots and his bulletproof vest, gang of goons and his big war chest. Fortunate son, he was doubly blessed. Corporate cronies and the chiefs of staff bowing to the image of the golden calf. Starting up wars in the name of God's son, gonna blow us all the way to kingdom come. Man of God, that ain't the teachings of a man of God. Man of God, that ain't the preachings of a man of God. Judgmental patricians, politicians, and the fundamentalists. You never have to tell them how money is spent. You never have to tell them where their freedom went. Homophobes in the high command, waiting for the rapture like it's Disneyland. Hide all the bodies from out of view. Channel all the treasure to the chosen few. Man of God, that ain't the preachings of a man of God. alive today, deliverer.
That was Eliza Gilkison with Man of God. In the wake of the noisy protest held in downtown Portsmouth on Tuesday, there have been some calls that those protesting ought to have done so in a more civilized way, more quietly, preferably by taking their issues to the ballot box and voting for what they'd like. There are numerous problems that one might identify in implementing that course of action alone, such as issues with campaign finances, lobbyists, the choices that are then presented, and let's not forget what's happened the past two elections, when questionable results were not fully investigated. Those that know their history know that electoral activism is only one way, and sometimes not the most effective way, to affect important, needed changes. Here's the Bush Boys by Michael Miranda.
Listen up, folks, the votes are in. It was anyone's guess who'd win. Democrats had the higher amount, but they lost 'cause Florida could not count. Men gotta go to the moon. Next they wanna be president too. Pay the piper but you don't get caught. You won't believe what the Bush boys bought. Hush little baby, don't you cry. Daddy's gonna buy you an alibi. If that alibi don't work, Daddy's gonna bribe the county clerk. If that county clerk don't on his side. If that Congress still don't budge, Daddy just don't love you enough. Some say the system is a fraud. Others put all their faith in God. Makes no what you say, you'll get yours at the judgment day. You sink so low upon your throne, even instigate a no free speech zone. It's hide and seek, but we know those tricks. So I'm getting busy with the Dixie Chicks. Hush little baby, don't you cry. Daddy's gonna buy you an alibi. If that alibi don't work, Daddy's gonna bribe the county clerk. If that county clerk don't bribe, Daddy's got Congress on his side. If that Congress still don't budge, Daddy just don't love you enough. he's gonna buy you an alibi. If that alibi don't work, daddy's gonna bribe the county clerk. If that county clerk don't bribe, daddy's got Congress on his side. If that Congress still don't budge, daddy's in tight with a Supreme Court judge. Hush, little baby, don't you cry. Daddy's gonna buy you an alibi. If that alibi don't work, daddy's gonna bribe the county clerk. If that county clerk don't bribe, daddy's got Congress on his side. If that Congress still don't budge, daddy just don't love you enough.
That was Michael Miranda with The Bush Boys. You're listening to Making Waves. We now bring you this interview from Red Eye Cooperative Radio on the growing crisis with Iran.
The dogs are baying and the wolves are howling. The voices that pushed for the invasion of Iraq are again revving their engines for an attack on Iran. To examine this intensifying crisis, we've reached Dr. Ahmad Sadri. He is active in Iranian politics and is a professor of sociology at Lake Forest College near Chicago. Good morning, Ahmad.
Good morning.
Now, CNN has apologized for seriously mistranslating the words of Iran's President Ahmadinejad, saying that Iran wanted nuclear weapons when what he said was actually the opposite of that. Now, mainstream media earlier reported his words as calling for, quote, wiping Israel off the map and calling the Holocaust a myth. Are these reports accurate?
Well, the mistake that you just referred to is pretty typical. These days, this happens all the time, the way media is reporting on the situation in Iran. It's very often that people confuse the development of nuclear energy and the development of nuclear weapons. Those very, very different things are quite often jumbled, not only on air, but also in the mind of people. So the President Ahmadinejad was emphasizing Iran's right that Iran has under any regime, his government, the previous government, or even a non-Islamic government that Iran had before the Islamic Revolution. Iran has, like every country, the right to develop nuclear energy. But, of course, these days, it looks like that there is a double standard applied to Iran where the development of nuclear energy is denied Iran because of the potential that the knowledge that is gained thereby could be also used to develop nuclear weapons.
I wonder if you could comment on his words as calling for wiping Israel off the map and calling the Holocaust a myth.
Well, I should be the last person to be an apologist for Ahmadinejad. I was quite active during the election against him, and I warned both in English and in Persian in my article that I wrote at the time in Iran that if he comes to power, he will cause Iran a lot of trouble because of his inexperience and because of his blinkered fundamentalism. But his comment about Israel being wiped off the map was not a military threat, but rather it was a statement. I admit that it's an unwise statement for a leader of a country in the region to make, but it was all the same this a statement referring to something like a referendum that would politically wipe out the entity of Israel. It had nothing to do with physically wiping out the country off the map, but rather what he had in mind was a political change that would change the political definition and create a one-state solution, so to speak, to the problem of Arab-Israeli conflict in the region, leading to a kind of democratic government in Palestine. And that is what he had in mind with that statement.
So do you think that the media took that out of context, or do you think he was just oblivious to how aggressive that would sound?
Both. I think he was oblivious. Again, I've said often that Iranians in electing Ahmadinejad elected their George Bush. They are both blinkered fundamentalists, and they are both quite ignorant of the world outside their own country. They never traveled outside their country before they came to power. So, yes, he is pretty oblivious, and everything that he says is very directed at internal consumption. He's unaware of the extent that statements like this will harm the cause of his country. But at the same time, the press will not win any medals for being fair and for reporting accurately his statements.
Great. Thanks for clarifying that. Now, on the nuclear issue, Iran, unlike other nuclear powers like India and Israel, has signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Is Iran actually violating that treaty?
No, Iran is in compliance with that treaty, and not only Iran has accepted that treaty, Iran has also signed an additional protocol that goes beyond what other countries have accepted, and Iran has gone even beyond that additional protocol in allowing inspections of some military sites. So Iran is more than in compliance with NPT, but it looks like that the international pressures are demanding that Iran do something like what they call confidence-building measures. In other words, Iran has to prove its innocence. And so it looks like that no matter what kind of additional assurances Iran provides, it whets the appetite of powers, other nuclear powers, to demand for more. And this is, by the way, not lost on Iranian people. The issue of nuclear energy has turned into a nationalist cause and a celebrated cause for people to come together to resist what they perceive to be colonialist pressures on Iran to prevent Iran from having nuclear energy.
So you mentioned that this has become a national issue. Is it only the supporters of Ahmadinejad within Iran that are championing their national right to create nuclear power?
Not at all. Ahmadinejad has a lot of enemies in Iran, first and foremost among the right wing. And by the way, a lot of these extreme statements are made to claim a share in determining Iran's foreign policy that has been taken away from him and given to other right-wing powers. So Ahmadinejad has a lot of detractors in Iran within his own party, and especially among reformers and people who really are not too friendly to the Islamic government. But the issue of nuclear energy is one that is very much agreed upon, and Iranians, regardless of their political leanings, support is a tough stance on nuclear issues. And I might add that the election of Ahmadinejad was in a way a backlash to the ineffective foreign policy of Mr. Khatami, his predecessor, and the idea was that all the soft talk and liberalism of Khatami didn't get Iran anything. Iran cooperated with Americans on the invasion of Afghanistan against the Taliban. All that Iran got under Khatami was a label of being part of the axis of evil. So the leaning towards extremism in the Middle East, whether in Iran or in Palestine, I think is to some extent the result of the policies of United States and European nations in the region.
Coming back to the issue of development of nuclear power and the threat of nuclear weapons, is this as much a case of double standards as the threats posed by Iran as were the allegation over Iraq's so-called or purported weapons of mass destruction?
Yes, I think this is eerily deja vu all over again situation. The insistence that we need to be proactive, and we don't want the warning sign to be a mushroom cloud, basically jumping the gun and shooting from the hip, and the same strategy that got us into Iraq is being followed in the case of Iran. Basically, the argument is that we should not really wait for legal procedures, and the situation is dire, and we shall go ahead with some kind of military action. And so that is basically the same situation. From the Iranian side, of course, people do see it as a double standard at work, because it looks like that one standard is applied to nuclear club members and another one to powers that don't have nuclear weapons. Nuclear club members, and we have quite a few of them in the region, Israel, India, Pakistan, Russia, and these have gotten their nuclear weapons by a subterfuge, hiding, and all kinds of their own Manhattan Project, so to speak. And once they get their nuclear weapons, immediately they become concerned about the spread of nuclear weapons. And if you are a country in the region that doesn't have nuclear weapons, this sounds pretty odd and unconvincing. So basically it looks like that this is a double standard and pressures that are brought to bear unjustly, and hence the backlash in Iran in support of developing nuclear energy in Iran.
Now, in the build-up to the U.S.-UK invasion of Iraq, continental European powers publicly tried to hold back the invasion. What role are they now playing in the Iran situation?
Well, it looks like that the EU3 now are inching closer to the American position, and their treatment of Iran, the language of the warnings that they issued to Iran were pretty tough, and from the point of view of Iranians, quite insulting. So it looks like that at this point, European nations, in other words, the three European nations, members of the Atomic Club, seem to be wanting to Iran to provide all kinds of assurances, and they come up with proposals that are, for lack of a better word, silly. The proposal that Iran should enrich its uranium in Russia is just, if you look at it, it just makes absolutely no sense for Iranians to pay for all of the nuclear materials to be shipped to Russia, be enriched there, and come back, and leaving the supply of their energy in the hand of an old rival to the north, empowering Russians and spending a lot of money for something that they illegally have the right under NPT to do in their own country. It makes no sense, and insisting on these kinds of proposals by the European powers and by the United States further infuriates Iranians. So it looks like that the European powers are not really doing much to end the crisis, and unfortunately, again, we are going to some kind of a showdown.
Are there countries, on the other hand, that are interested in cooling down this intensifying crisis?
Well, of course, Russia, the Chinese are, and to some extent, again, Russians with this proposal to enrich Iranian uranium in their soil, they have everything to gain and nothing to lose. Chinese, of course, are interested in Iranian oil and gas, and so they really are not too eager to go ahead with the punishments that will come down on Iran should the case be referred to the Security Council. So, again, there are other countries that are trying to calm the situation, but Americans and then, to some extent, Europeans are dead set on referring Iran to the Security Council or on signing off on a bombing of Iran, probably to be carried out by Israel.
Now, earlier you made a comment about George Bush and Ahmadinejad as being mirror images of one another. Do you think that parallel kind of carries further to U.S. neocons pushing for war and Iran's actions?
Yes, I actually once wrote an article comparing the ruling elite in Iran to the neocons in the United States. Both parties, of course, were infuriated by the comparison, but from where I can see, both countries are ruled by these counter-elites that grew up around the margins of academia and rose to power, and what they both have in common is that, and one of the things that they have in common, actually, is that their foreign policy has nothing to do with the national interests of the nation that they are representing, but is a direct result of an extreme ideological view of the world. So Ahmadinejad's insistence on talking about Israel that really has nothing to do with Iranian foreign policy interests, and George Bush's insistence in spreading quote-unquote democracy in the region, they, I think, have very little to do with the national interests of Iran or United States, and they have everything to do with the image, self-important image of these counter-elites who have risen to power.
Ahmad, thank you for joining me this morning, and I appreciate your helping us get a deeper look into the situation.
My pleasure always. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Dr. Ahmad Sadri. He's active in Iranian politics, and he's a professor of sociology at Lake Forest College near Chicago.
Be a gangster when you're a kid. You just think about what Al Capone did. With all that fast life, guns and money, shooting people down because they look at you funny. Like a big shot way high up on a stump. You can snap your fingers and make everybody jump. But the power dream sometimes comes true. Till you meet somebody who's got more power than you do. It feels good to be bad, and it's right to be wrong. A life sentence don't seem so long. Now it's a hard world, concrete and steel, and it's hard to notice how you feel when every other hero on the movie screen is an action man with a killing machine. You see the mighty muscles flex and flaunt. Seems like they get almost anything they want. Politicians in plain criminal view. They can do it, why not you? It feels good to be bad, when it's right to be wrong, and a life sentence don't seem so long. Now it's a childhood world of walled-off yards, metal detectors and armed guards, cops patrolling the hamburger stand. Seems like almost everybody's got a gun in their hand. Now you come rolling up in your rap machine, adrenaline pumping the excitable scene. You feel the action, you're catching the buzz. You gotta make your move before somebody else does. And it feels good to be bad, when it's right to be wrong, and a life sentence don't seem so long. Caught strutting down that criminal line, they're gonna put you away for long. Now why'd you wanna go and let them lock you down? You know it's the biggest business around. They don't care about how you rehabilitate. You're just a cash flow like real estate. Three strikes and you're out, that's what they say. Somebody gonna get rich while you wither away. Good to be bad when it's right to be wrong, and a life sentence don't seem so long. Now when I was a kid I was real dumb. I had no idea how a puppet got strung. I thought I had my own point to prove. I didn't know that somebody else was making me move. Now after all those years apart, now it's time for the puppet to start to get smart. So put down that pipe and pick up your brain. We're gonna have to reinvent the rules to this tired old game. Cause it feels good to be bad when it's right to be wrong, and a life sentence don't seem so long.
That was Jim Page with Right to Be Wrong. Now for a commentary by Stephen Diamond.
Next, we have a column I wrote that'll soon be posted on nhindymedia.org. That's nhindymedia.org on the right bar as part of the column Between a Rack and a Hard Place. This is called Nuclear Chicken and Other Power Games. The democratically elected president of Iran claims that their nuclear program is entirely peaceful. There is no conclusive evidence that this assertion is false. If Iran does seek nuclear weapons, this too could be argued to be a peaceful purpose, at least if you subscribe to George Bush-style reasoning, as Iran's president seems to. The Iranian people seek to be treated as equals, as all humanity deserves. Their president would then probably be happy to dominate in the name of peace, as Bush is now doing. But any premise of fairness or law requires that leaders be held to account only for the crimes they are doing, not for what they might do eventually. Now we must witness the highest-stakes litmus test of all. Can Europe and the U.S., much less Israel, swallow their fascist tendencies and greed for domination and allow a fair balance of power between equals, or would they rather plunge the world into catastrophic conflict in the hopes of maintaining their economic, political, and nuclear hegemony? The former approach would prove Iran wrong, the latter would prove them right. That is the question we're facing, and if the extraordinary historical arrogance of the Western powers is any indication, they're going to try to call that bluff. Unfortunately for us all, Iran is not bluffing. They have the power and influence to push the price of oil way beyond $100 a barrel, perhaps even $200. That would break the back of the U.S. economy, because on that front, we are the ones bluffing. China and Japan literally own much of the U.S. economy, and will make the prudent decision when the time comes to cash out and leave Wall Street crumbling. The neocolonial era may be drawing to a close, and good riddance, but when rigidly ideological fundamentalist conservatives vie for power, the whole world is caught in the middle. Western leaders are eager for peace, as long as it is secured on their own terms through the leverage of overwhelming firepower. Such peace is really just slavery by other means, in the trappings of civilized discourse. Let us not blame the victim, even an insane one. If the U.S. can actually start living up to its repeated promises of total nuclear disarmament, we will gain the credibility and genuine unity to speak as one planet and force the leaders of Iran and all other dangerous extremists, including Blair and many other world leaders, to live up to their promises as well. There is no real peace without justice, and only laws based on apartheid work just for us. The only way I would be able to support referring Iran to the UN for sanctions is for the US and Israel to be referred with Iran at the same time, for war crimes, terrorism, naked aggression, and blatant disregard for international law. Until that happens, the world's disenfranchised nations can and should secure a nuclear deterrent, and there's nothing the U.S. can do about it without self-destructing.
Now for this political remix called All the Lies by Rando Majestic.
Biological weapons, including anthrax and botulism toxins.
Biological and chemical agents to kill millions of people.
Chemical weapons, including VX, sarin, mustard gas.
To a massive and sudden horror.
Massive death.
Destruction. Death.
On a massive scale.
The danger to our country is great.
The danger to our country is growing.
The Iraqi regime possesses biological and chemical weapons.
The Iraqi regime is building the facilities necessary to make more biological and chemical weapons.
And according to the British government, the Iraqi regime could launch a biological or chemical attack in as little as 45 minutes after the order were given. The regime has long-standing and continuing ties to terrorist organizations. and there are Al-Qaeda terrorists inside Iraq. The regime is seeking a nuclear bomb. And with fissile material, can build one within a year.
They're planning.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
Intelligence gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt that the Iraqi regime continues to possess and conceal some of the most lethal weapons ever devised.
Is U.S. credibility on the line over weapons of mass destruction in Iraq?
I'm not exactly sure what that means.
That was Rando Majestic with All the Lies.
To hear our previous shows, please visit our archive online at www.freewebs.com/sprav/audio.htm. Please email nhmakingwaves@yahoo.com and let us know what you think of our show. And feel free to call the station in the next hour for more information, 430-9722.